Hello and welcome to Team White. I'm Alex Linder. I'm here in Northeast Missouri. And with me today, we have Allison Chablot in the UK. And also we have Jan in South Africa. So Tricontinental Report. I'm going to start by looking at the USA and what's going on there. The still, and notice everything takes longer than you think. I've said on the last two or three shows that it would surely be resolved by the time we did the next show. But of course, it's not resolved. So I don't suppose it will be resolved until maybe the 20th of January, which is now only less than a month away. Trump is trying to find people to help him sue. He's getting rejected by the courts. I'm not sure what all he has left to do, but a lot of people would like him to declare martial law. I don't think very many people think he will actually do that. But as I may have said before, there's a lot of people who would join him if he did, not even because they like Trump, but because they really don't like the communists on the other side, the Jew-led communists who are itching to take over and complete the revolution. Anyway, that's pretty much the situation within the U.S. The only other thing related to Trump I wanted to mention was that the other side is so powerful institutionally now. Academia, government, and media, we've always talked about those. I talked about those for 20 years. But now you have to say the big corporations, too, are thoroughly executive managed by the woke, the left-wing SJW, Jew, and upper-middle-class liberal arts types who go in and do business. And they're able to leverage extreme pressure against anybody who disagrees, including people who are outside of their sphere. So Trump can't, you know, in the process of filing lawsuits in the various contested states, he needs local legal help, and he's having a hard time finding it, even when he's paying a whole bunch of money, because, and I looked and I couldn't find the article right here, but within the last week, one of the larger law firms said, hey, don't work for the Trump administration. They don't want any of their members signing up to help Trump, even at a high pay rate, because the ramifications of being frozen out and blacklisted if you do that. So just like people who are basic white nationalists have trouble around the world, as we're going to hear about, going against the Jews and finding people who will help represent them. So the person at the very top of the United States, some say the most powerful man in the world, can't get legal help because they're afraid of being blackballed essentially by the Jews when all is said and done. So keep that in mind. And now that's what's going on in the U.S. We have a cold snap here, and as winter hits in the Nemo, people lining up yesterday to get their vaccine shots. We were one of the counties in Missouri where they actually got some of the so-called vaccines. So I wouldn't take it personally, but you know they're giving it to some of the leaders in the county, so the others will be impressed and follow along once more is made available. So for a few hours, they were lined up in their cars and getting it, and that's really pretty much the news as far as I'm concerned as we record this the day before Christmas. Now we're going to go over to the UK where it's a little warmer than here and hear what Allison has to say about. Allison, any local news or personal news over there worth reporting to the UK? Or cut the continent. Oh,
hi, Alex. Hi, Jan. Hi, everyone. Hi, listeners. I'm in London, and we are now in a tier four lockdown. That means that all non-essential shops are closed, all pubs, all restaurants. And this was announced a week last Wednesday. It wasn't announced a week last Wednesday. A week last Wednesday, the government was saying, oh, we're not going to cancel Christmas. Everything's fine. That would be inhuman to cancel Christmas. 2 days later, hey presto, Parliament is dissolved for the Christmas recess. And London and other parts of the southeast enter into now this very strict lockdown. It's the same as the original lockdown. The schools were open until they broke up last Friday. for the 2 weeks holiday as well. So now basically the only shops that are open are food shops, supermarkets. You can go to hardware stores, garden centres. I think they're open, but that's it. We are in. It's no pubs open, so they've really gone for it. They really have cancelled Christmas. But there is resistance. the ex-Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, his brother Piers Corbyn, has a movement. He's organising demonstrations, saying that we must resist, as are many of the opposition figures, because the government is doing what it is, because there is literally no opposition. We now have this Keir Starmer, puppet of a certain lobby in power, as leader of the opposition. He is absolutely no opposition at all. He would implement even stricter, harsher lockdowns on the population than does the present government. And at the same time, of course, we've got this tier four. On the 31st of December, we end the transition period of Brexit, because we left the European Union on the 1st of January 2020, the 31st of January, I can't remember exactly, but we definitely, there was this further 12 months of transition, but from the 1st of January, we are, we've signed a trade deal. Now, I've not looked into detail. We have finally signed a trade deal with the EU after 4 years of negotiations. And from what I can see on Twitter and how I understand it, it's pretty much one of the several deals that the former Prime Minister Theresa May had already placed on the table and at the time had been rejected by the English Parliament. So we're going to have to see, because both Britain, the Parliament in Britain, and the EU Parliament are going to have to pass this legislation for a new trade deal. So we'll see what happens there. Boris is making, the typical kind of Churchillian declarations about getting our borders back and our freedoms back and being able to decide our own laws, etc. Oh, but he's just a bumbling idiot. There's a picture of him and some other member of the government there, and they both look dreadful. They look unkempt, fat. Whereas the two representatives, the current leader, the woman, I can't remember her name, of the EU Parliament and Barnier, they look very smart, very together. And I just think, my God, what has Britain become? Just look at these two clowns. And here they are. Oh, yes, we're going to make it on our own. Such is the life in this ridiculous island. Oh, we're called Plague Island. That's the hashtag now, because of this new strain of coronavirus. A new strain. And of course, that is the reason now that they're using. That's the USP for selling the vaccine. Is there's this new strain of the virus, which is totally normal.
Don't worry,
normal.
Hold on. Alison, sorry for interrupting. We've also got a strain of COVID, a South African strain. Oh my goodness. Yes.
It's from two people who both visited South Africa. There's only been two cases.
Serious?
Of this
serious?
New strain. Yes. And it's discovered in Kent. Yes. I've not looked in detail. I just see posts, flash by. But Gilad Atzmon has been writing about this, about the link in this new strain between South Africa and Britain.
Well, that is so funny. That's funny on a number of different levels. The one is, I saw that Britain apparently has put out some new regulations about the dangers of coming to South Africa. Though, to be honest with you, I don't know if anybody has died. But anyhow, glad to know that we're a threat to the world. Not that I particularly care, but I only know one person who's even had COVID so far. So...
A woman at the supermarket told me that her mother's friend had died of it. But that's the only instance that I've heard since March.
They said it's killed seven in our county, and two of them were 96.
There's no more deaths than usual. The graphs
CDC has admitted lower. Like, oh, flu is 98% below its normal level. So I mean, these people consider the public just a bunch of idiots and clowns.
And Alex, in South Africa, they've said that this is a year that we had no flu season. No flu season.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, they're just playing games with numbers, basically.
Just
totally in order to justify these stupid controls.
Yeah. Yes, so that's big news. And of course, yes, I was in court last week on the 17th of December back at Westminster Magistrates Court. I have written an update, but that's also behind a password. I'm being a little bit more careful. I can relate what happened there. It was a quick hearing, but the state of the British justice system. We arrived. Two or three supporters came. They came not wearing masks. None of us were wearing any masks, and you go into this court and there's one of those airport style machines that x-rays all your bags and briefcases. That wasn't working. this is the trial where all the terrorism trials begin. All the first instant trials are here in the Westminster Terrorist Court, Westminster Magistrates Court. They changed the courtroom three times. And in the end, I was back in that court number one. And they made a few people go out of the room. And the prosecution lawyer was alone, which was something new. I've not really seen that before in past hearings. The lawyers have always been very, there's always been a pack of them together. But this time, no, he seemed to be alone. There were three or four journalists there and a few people in the public gallery. It didn't last long. After I pled not guilty to these three new charges of using a public communications network to cause gross offence. And I the month before I'd also been in court. I don't think we've spoken since then. Regular listeners might remember I've been gagged all year pretty much not to post anything online. But in November, the bail conditions were relaxed somewhat, but there's an entertaining list of subjects that I must avoid. there is a brief report on my website where that is available for readers. It's not behind a password. There's a legal update posted I think last Saturday. You'll be able to see that if you go. It was before then. One of the recent posts on my website, there is this change of bail conditions. But I'd love to go away somewhere. I really would. I've been stuck here with these court cases on a pretty regular basis since December 2016. They never let go. They're asking, the opposition is asking for a sentence with real teeth. One of the journalists, I'm not sure whether there was a court news report with the same very, very misleading claims alleged by the prosecution against me in the hearing in November. But the adversaries, the complainants, they are on my website. They are demanding a sentence with real teeth. And I see that their supporters on Twitter are making the usual kind of comment that going along with this idea, I should be fed to the dogs. And that they're really hoping that I'm going down for a long time this time, etc. But I don't think that will be. If they do, my lawyers will get me out pretty quickly, I imagine, because of the very complex nature of my case, the fact that we requested disclosure for my appeal last July, which overturned this earlier prison sentence from a year last September, from my original case. So we can still go ahead and request this disclosure, which will, without any shadow of doubt, provide evidence of political meddling from a foreign lobby inside government, inside the institutions, inside the police, and inside the probation service and the Crown Prosecution Service. So that's why they're given this time again. Luckily, it's in the magistrates' court. There's no jury that have to deal with COVID restrictions. There's a huge backlog in the Crown Court. In case some cases are being dropped for just lack of resources, and as I'd said, the court system is really struggling. I don't really. The courts are closing. Magistrates' courts are closing. District magistrates' courts are closing over the past decade, despite three consecutive Conservative governments. They have conserved very little, apart from, of course, the wealth in their own offshore accounts and their connections with corrupt politicians, globalist politicians worldwide. So that's my news. And then my next trial, the last interesting thing about my case was that I was, after the first pleas, the judge said that I could step outside of the dock and just sit in court, which I did, while they discussed what documents would be required, for what date the judge set out the directives. And when it came to the choice of venue, it was originally stated that the only two possible dates in the relatively near future would be the 30th and the 31st of March. However, the case would then be shifted to a court in the certain republic, Jewish, North London Republic of Hendon, where really the people who began all this campaign against me before this NGO, they live there. So, my barrister and I, oh my gosh, there couldn't really be a worse venue. Anyway, a few hours later, a few hours later, the judge wrote to my barrister and said that the case had been retransferred back to Westminster magistrates. So that's when I will next be on trial, the 30th and the 31st of March, Westminster magistrates, if it goes ahead. Certain other people, certain commentators seem to believe that because of this High Court ruling last week also against an anti-transgender lobbyist on Twitter, she managed to have her case overturned in the Court of Appeal, that's the High Court, and the judge ruled that we do have the right to offend in Britain. So this is the crucial aspect of my new case. It's not songs. It's not songs. It's just me speaking down the phone to people, like as I'm speaking to you now, and the person I'm speaking to broadcasting those podcasts online. So that they would love to silence me forever. But as you know, well,
so
that would.
So are you saying that
I'm still gagged, but
are you saying that this other court, that the judge found that people have a right, that you are allowed to offend now to some degree?
Yes, it's a funny story. It was in the Daily Mail and in the Telegraph, and I linked to it in my most recent or my into last post behind the password there. I think I sent that out, but I'm having problems in transmitting emails as well and receiving emails with Outlook. I'm not sure why, but yes, there is a link to that Daily Mail article or the Telegraph article perhaps about this case. Justice Warby, he ruled that the people do have the right to offend, and it must be relevant now to this new case. That the previous case that I lost, my appeal at the High Court, the prison sentence for breaching the sentence was then overturned. But this is a new case, and it's not songs. It's just me expressing my views peacefully, and there's very, very little absolutely nothing in there that constitutes unlawful unlawfulness under this particular act, causing gross offence. People might find it offensive, but it's certainly not grossly offensive. And that's the difference with my first trial, because my songs were they didn't bring out anything that nobody has said before. David Irving has said before. Nicholas Kolostrom has said the same things as me before. Michael Hoffman. There are people who have said these things that I collected together in songs that they particularly didn't like, that I used traditional non-Aryan music for my songs. So that's the difference. That's the difference with my first trial and with this new trial. It's going to be an interesting case. The judge said it was going to be an interesting case. We will see, that they obviously are, willing to promote little old me for some reason, for offences that don't really exist, as with you, I think your case, Jan, we're going to hear about that. It's about me publishing stuff. I'm not sending my stuff to anybody, but that's how the opposition is using lawfare and the laws that exist in order to silence dissidents.
Question. Alison, in my discussions with an attorney over here, we were talking about the fact that at some point, it depends what happens in my legal stuff, but because mine is also very complicated. Initially, I've got a simple thing to deal with, but you know who is going to be busy, and they're trying to get bigger things going. And the big thing that we were discussing was, at what point does freedom of speech end, and what you could call defamation or hate speech. At what point does freedom of speech disappear and hate speech begin? And that is something that we will later be dealing with, maybe with my stuff, maybe. And because they are obviously trying to criminalize anything. And just like with you, they're going to tremendous lengths to pretend all kinds of stuff. And just like with you, those laws that they use against you about sending messages and so on, the term message is abused and misused and deliberately misused. And that is something that I'm seeing very clearly. It's something that you've mentioned, I think, about Communications Act and you uploading to the internet. And whereas the Communications Act says that you have to send a message, but if you upload it to the internet, to the public, you're not sending it to anybody.
They argued against that. The Crown argued against that in my first case, and I lost.
What did they say?
Sending or causing to be sent. There are two different charges depending on what I do. For one song that I directly uploaded to YouTube, that was sending, even though I was sending it to a server in Los Angeles or California, wherever.
Really?
And the first two cases was because I shared a link, and that was causing to be sent, because the person sees the link and then clicks on the link. But there are authorities from other common law districts, and including in England and including in Canada, I believe, that are now contesting this sending.
Absolutely.
If it was written down, and posted on a notice board or simply spoken, it's about internet control. Our cases, I think, in the wider picture, it's about being able to impose more control over the internet. And as we've already discussed, that's why the government are now, they've put it into their hands of the big corporates, the social media giants. They're the ones for policing speech rather than the actual government. But the government is threatening, these companies, unless you do this, unless you ban these people, unless you cancel and deplatform this person, then you're going to be fined.
So, because Alison, I'd like to just clarify this a bit with you. Like in South Africa, in this particular case that I've got, the case is harassment. So the definition in South Africa is that harassment is if I send a message to you, and it specifically states that let's say I call you. It's actually intended for family purposes in South Africa. So it's somebody who's angry with somebody else. It's most likely a family member, and it's like, I am sick of you, and I'm gonna come and fuck you up, and this and that, and you bitch or whatever, and somebody phones somebody and says something, or sends a text message, or sends a WhatsApp, or sends an email. I'm gonna come and bugger you up, and then later on comes back and sends another, let's say, email. So it's a very specific thing of a person to a person. It's one person to another person. That's what it is. So the documents that you fill in when you go to the police, it says, what is the sending mobile number? What is the sending email address? And what time was the message sent? You sent it at 9 p.m. on that day. It's very specific. It's person to person. And they are trying now, they're trying now to say, oh, well, anything I put on the internet is now a message. Hold on, hold on, hold on. That's not so. If I post an article on my website, you cannot say that my article on a website is a message to Alison Chablot. If Alison Chablot doesn't come to my website and doesn't read the article, you can't say that I sent it to her. She'll never get it. If I emailed it to Alison Chablot, yes, then I sent it to her. But me posting an article on a website, that's not a message. And the same thing is happening with comments. Comments on my website. Comments, they're busy trying to argue, oh no, you see, a comment is a message. No, it's not a message. It's a public forum. The internet, a website, an article, a comments page, it's like walking into the center of a little village. You're in the town square, and you stand on your little soapbox, and you're busy talking there, and everybody can hear you. Nobody can say then that you're talking. If you just stand on your little soapbox and you just talk at the top of your voice, nobody can say you're talking. Oh, this message is aimed exactly at Alison Chablot when you're busy talking generally about something. And that is exactly the nature of what they're trying to do in my case. They're trying to pretend, oh, this is a message that came in this way. And it's rubbish, because if that is the case, then what about every single newspaper that's publishing online? If a newspaper is publishing an article online and it gets 1 million readers today, has it sent a message to 1 million people? Can 1 million people take offense? Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's that they've got. There's an exclusion clause in the legislation that I've been prosecuted under that excludes public broadcasting services. I sent you the link to
No,
this
thank you.
High Court ruling. Judges have insisted that freedom of speech includes the right to offend in a landmark ruling which could help to turn the tide on woke intolerance after a feminist who called a transgender woman a pig in a wig and a man was cleared. Freedom to only speak inoffensively is not worth having, said Lord Justice Bean and Mr. Justice Warby, adding that free speech encompasses the right to offend and indeed to
Now,
abuse another. See, so
now,
this is
now.
a landmark ruling, and it may have a direction on my case. It may not.
Allison.
There may be, some kind of exclusion for certain subjects.
If I may add into that,
Yes.
you were saying that it excludes public broadcasting. Now, there we're talking, because the internet and a website is very similar to the old style radio network. your radio aerial is busy broadcasting your signal across the entire town or the entire country. And the a single signal is going to everybody. And a website is exactly the same thing. It is sitting there, and unless you tune in to the web, if you want to listen to the radio old style, you have to tune in to the radio station in order to hear the message. If you don't tune into the radio station, you're not going to hear the message. Well, you get the same effect with a website. I can be publishing on my website 24/7 and you won't know a thing about it until the day that you come and visit. You got to like tune in to my website in order to see the message. If my website only has like a page that's got a limited number of items on it, and I post something and you come back after a month, you won't even see what I published last week or 2 weeks ago. Whereas if you go to your email, if I were to send a message to you, and it goes to your email, and you don't read your emails for a month, but then after a month you go and you read your emails, you will see my message there. The same is true for a text message. The same is true for a WhatsApp message, Telegram message, etc., etc. There's a difference between broadcasting and between sending a message to a particular person. And if you – so anyway, so – But very fascinating. I'm going to read this with great interest. This could be very interesting. Thank you, Alison.
You're welcome. Yeah, let's hear about your case, Jan. What's going on there?
Well, in my case, I appeared on the 6th of November, but I appeared just for a quick sort of formality. And the next thing I knew is they were busy throwing in additional stuff, and they were saying, oh, this woman's life is in danger. She's in danger, and they need to remove her photograph and her name from my website immediately because she's in such danger. And the magistrate actually said in court that he's going to grant it to them, but he did say clearly that he did not have enough time to consider this properly, but he's going to grant it anyway. So that is a fast one that they managed to pull off. Then they ran off to the news to go and talk about it in the news, and they blew it up and they said a whole bunch of stuff. So in the meantime, since then, what we've been busy with is I sent a reply affidavit. And they've replied to the reply affidavit, and I'm busy with the next reply. But I can see many interesting things coming up now. Now things are starting to form a picture. I'm starting to see how they are thinking and what their tactics are. And there are things that are better not said at this point in time, but very educational, Alison, very educational to see things firsthand, one-on-one, to read their documents and see it. And lots of stuff to take apart there, plenty, I must tell you. But So that's where we stand, and then I'll say, let me just say it this way. There is a rumor, I cannot say more, but there is a rumor that more court cases are coming to me. And that's all I'm going to say at this point. But my own feeling is that no matter what happens, I reckon this year is going to be a wild year in court. It's going to be court non-stop. So officially my next court appearance is the middle of March, 2 weeks before you, officially, but you never know. I might even be in court before then with something else, so we don't know. I think it could be a wild year, so that's as much as I'll say about that. Let me just give a little bit of news about South Africa very quickly. In South Africa, Alex in South Africa, good news. COVID is impacting the economy negatively to such a degree, and it delights and pleases me that one of the biggest news organizations in South Africa is firing 400 staff members. And then there is the SABC, which used to be the government media organization, SABC. They are firing 500. So the mass media has taken an immense hit from COVID, and it delights and pleases me to see.
Hooray!
Yes, hooray! Hooray for COVID! COVID hit them straight in the kisser in a way that is just delightful. If COVID were in the room with me, I would hug COVID right now. I'd say, COVID baby, let's get married. So COVID has been great, and nobody I know is dead. I've only known one person who's even been ill. Maybe I might know a second person who's got COVID. Maybe. But otherwise, COVID is rocking. And they did increase some restrictions here, but I don't think it's as bad as it was. I don't even care anymore. It's not as bad as it was. And they also say, like you said, oh, there's a new strain of COVID. So then our government scientists, or some scientists, and who knows how much they know or don't know, they said that COVID, we got a new strain of COVID here, but we don't think it's more deadly, but it spreads faster. Well, whatever the hell.
it's the same modus operandi. I've been thinking about this and making a couple of comments. There's more testing, and these tests are not valid. There's more testing, which is obviously going to result in more cases. Therefore, the argument that, or arguing that, we have to do more against the virus because look at all these rising cases. It's the same disingenuous, false logic used by the anti-racism organizations. Oh, look, the increase in hate crime. We have to stop this mutating virus of hate crime and hate speech. We need to do something about it. Governments have got to stop. We can't be having people talking about these things online. It's kind of the same psychological approach. You know, oh, look at all these rising cases of this deadly virus, which isn't deadly at all, you know, yes. Only if you're very weak and very elderly, and you're already infirm. But it's the same, you know, more cases mean more positive tests mean more cases, and more hate crime reports means more hate crime.
Yeah, it's like, I think even a black in America said something like this, where they said, you know, we must stop all this hate or hate. And then the guy said, well, you need to stop talking about it. You know, it's that simple, man.
It's really crazy. And there's I saw on Twitter this morning that the hashtag gammon was trending, used by it's a slur for white people that they're using in particularly in Britain.
Oh, really? All the liberals, gammon.
All the liberals are using this slur against, you know, patriotic whites, the Brexit voters. They're all gammon. Or they can use whatever slur they like. I don't care. People can have free speech, but they can't then turn around and accuse, you know, that they are, that they take this delicious thrill in being racist against whites because they are permitted. Whereas if anybody used some kind of slur against them for whatever group they're from, they'd be using the app, you know, that's provided to them to make a report, boost those hate crime figures yet more. But we can't report, well, you know, for being called gammon online.
Yeah, no one will have any idea what that means in the U.S. Yeah. I think I've seen that one time. Yeah, well, how is that spelled?
GAMMON, and it's like a thick piece of ham. a gammon steak.
Okay. Yeah, that's not a thing in the U.S. No one would know what it meant.
Well, that's what the BAME community is using.
Isn't that from a pig?
Yes, yes. It's pork.
So there's probably a little bit of a twist there on that. The white
pigs. All the white slurs are perfectly legal in any medium.
Yeah, and even, you know, you've got these people, like women, young women who identify as Muslim or perhaps Sikh, or they are using these terms, but the Twitter profile will say, for example, Muslim, feminist, liberal, and there's so many paradoxes. I mean, how can you be a Muslim and be liberal? Obviously there are plenty of them, but they don't see the paradoxes. And these people are probably second generation, perhaps third generation immigrants. And with each generation, from my point of view, from my perspective, it seems that they are becoming more aggressive and more hostile towards the indigenous Britons, towards the white people of Britain. That's what I'm feeling. They've been empowered with all this BLM stuff going on and seeing politicians and the police get on their knees, you know, take the knee for George Floyd. They've been empowered by that. The whole atmosphere has changed. You know, I'm based in London at the moment, and it is very, very multicultural, and the ambience has changed. The general atmosphere has changed, and it is as if, you know, some extra power has been granted to these minorities above and beyond the power that they have already been granted, you know, in the name of quote unquote equality.
Right.
And you know, it's unpleasant.
Question for you. You say that they've changed. Is it a recent change or a gradual change over a long period of time? Or has it been speeding up?
Oh, it's been speeding up this year because of COVID restrictions and then because of the BLM rioting. What did that have to do with Black Britons, for goodness sake? And it's very frustrating that the people that would then turn around, you know, they would fight in the name of their own group interests, but obviously they're not doing that. We know that, but they believe that they are fighting in the name of their own group interests. Then they turn around and call the indigenous Brits gammon. Oh, but you're just gammon. And it's because of some, you know, these terrible historic wrongs that were committed by, you know, my ancestors. Although, you know, I have absolutely no clue, but that's, you know, that's what they're using, I think.
This, Alison, this is very interesting.
And the politicians are going along with it, of course.
This is very interesting. I had a friend from South Africa who lives in Britain, and he lives in London, and he told me that basically the way that these non-whites and Muslims and Indians and everybody operates in London and Britain, they are very racial. They stick to their group. And here in South Africa and here in Africa as a whole, when you leave these non-whites alone, everybody gravitates to their own group. They don't come and just generally invite whites together, etc. They function as a group. They stick together. They intermarry only inside their group. In fact, there are many of them who will not marry other non-whites. For example, in South Africa, Indian people who are of Asian descent, Indian people very, very, very rarely marry outside of their group of Indians. I think I've only come across one Indian woman who married a black. And there are a couple of Indians who married whites. But otherwise, 97-98% of them only marry other Indians, period. And there are black groups where blacks won't marry others. Zulus who will only marry Zulus. So, you know, this whole notion of multiculturalism, everyone's going to be together, and the reality is not that. It doesn't work like that.
No. No. But then again, you know, you do have this generation of, as I was saying, second, third generation offspring of immigrants who came here. And they came here with, you know, reasonable intentions. But now they've been poisoned, you know, drank from the poison well of liberalism, and are quite happy to be racist in using their own logic and their own modus operandum and their own terms against me and against whites in general in Britain.
And how
it's awful. It's really horrible.
How do your friends and other people, other whites that you know, how are they reacting to this? Aren't they seeing it?
Well, yes, they are. They are seeing it, but our voices are suppressed and there's all this social media censorship going on, shadow banning and lockdowns. So you know, it's very hard to organise, to gather. And of course, the lockdown has permitted more people to get online and get into dramas and arguments online. So the right wing gets fractured again and splintered again. But you know, we're just being ruled by buffoons, governed by buffoons, by a group of idiots that are just—they're not conserving anything, despite being called conservatives. They're letting this country go to rack and ruin, and it's the fault of the corporates and the banking industry and the system in general. Other people are noticing it, of course, and there are people from within those BAME communities who notice as well and who speak out as well. It's not a general. At my court hearing last week, there was one Muslim lady, one mixed race man who came to support me, and a white man, ex-BNP press officer. So it was very nice, deep, diverse group of little support. It's not that, you know, it's not about demonizing everybody from each particular group, but there is this underlying unease, especially regarding these big multicultural centres in the UK. We also had last week the government report on child sexual exploitation and in particular grooming gangs. So, you know, all the nationalists and the civic nationalists and the ethno nationalists and the Tommy Robinsons and the Sargon Avocad, and that they all get the wrong end of the stick. Yes, there are plenty of faults with this grooming gang report. However, when you look at child sexual exploitation as a whole, and not just these street grooming gangs of Muslims who prey on, you know, vulnerable working class white girls whose family are either, you know, selling drugs, that, well, there's no family. They're probably single parent family, and the parents are on drugs or very poor or working, and don't have time to give the attention to their child that's necessary. There's still, you know, Muslim grooming gangs are the majority when it comes to street grooming and child sexual exploitation via that method. But there's the child exploitation, sexual exploitation going on online from other groups, and you know, it's more widespread. Asians overall are not the biggest perpetrators of grooming and child sexual exploitation in the UK. But if you listen to all these nationalists, you understand they are saying that that's so they are creating more divide. I say, you know, it's a time we can't do anything. I think the racial nationalist politics seen in the UK, it's doomed from the start. We have Patriotic Alternative. Yes, they do some good work and it's very nice. They go out for hikes and might do the odd, you know, flash demo with a White Lives Matter banner, but they're going down the same route as the British National Party, as the National Front. It's not going to be successful. It's, you know, it's the same over the past 40 years, this is what nationalist organizations have tried to do in the UK. But instead of gaining power, they've lost power. You know, they're just jokes. We need to now look, I think, strongly at how the Europeans have managed, the European nationalists have managed to at least, you know, get a foot in the door, should we say, with Salvini, with Marine Le Pen, with the Dutch guy. I'm not thinking about Wilders, I'm thinking about the other guy, the populist, the Spanish Vox Party. There's a much bigger nationalist political presence in the on European mainland than there is in Britain. We just have two parties that represent the same neoliberal global system, and we don't have anybody in there, no party that is in any way attractive to the voting population, even though there are plenty of quote unquote gammon nationalists. It's not going to appeal to, and especially under the system we have, the first past the post system rather than proportional representation, it's not going to lead anyway. So the definition of insanity, you know, repeating the same thing over and over and again and expecting different results, I don't think that patriotic alternative is going to lead to anything. There is an opening, or there will be, with Corona and with this disaster of a government with Boris Johnson. There is an opening. People are fed up with the Zionist lobby, Starmer being the leader of the opposition. They are fed up with that. They want to change. But to make the difference, we do have to look at how the AfD in Germany, in particular, I think they went from 0 to 90 seats in a very short space of time. So we need to look at how they did that, research the data and get people on board who are competent, articulate, and who are appealing and who can provide an attractive solution, an attractive opposition, globalist populism, anti-globalist populism against the system, against the international banking system, etc. That is what we need.
Questions for you. Alison, what is the basic difference between the white nationalists in Britain and the Europeans? Is there a personality difference between the Europeans on the European mainland? Do they think differently? Because another thing that I've noticed, which I think plays into why we lose most of the time, is that, And I think Alex and I have discussed this a number of times, is that if you can say what you want to say, then you can reach an audience. But if they restrict what you're allowed to say, and then eventually you end up with just the same putrid, weak, pathetic nonsense that the previous lot said. And is it that free speech is more curbed? Or is it that there's some different kind of personality between the average Brit and the average European?
Well, I think the Brits have been more influenced over the past 50 years by American culture than by nations in the rest of Europe. Now, I lived in Switzerland for 20 years. Yes, there is a difference in mentality, and in Switzerland, you have four separate regions with different languages even. There's a French-speaking region where I lived, the main German-speaking region, the Italian-speaking region, and all these different regions have their own characteristics, and there will be this kind of cozy racism between between groups, sometimes more aggressive than others, perhaps. But yes, I think that having separate languages will go to develop a different mentality, stereotypical, you know, the Germans who are very, very serious, working, and they're all going along with the coronavirus restrictions. You know, you don't see any Germans that are not wearing their masks and being dutiful citizens. Well, yes, of course you do in the poorer areas. It's the same all over Europe, but there is this Germanic, Nordic style. Still, I would say the work ethic. We see how the Nordic countries, Scandinavia, has developed and its high level of social equality, even though that has brought separate problems into the picture. Then you have the Latin countries, the French, the Spanish, Italians, the Romanians, the Portuguese, and they are, you know, the stereotypical, they're more hot-tempered, they are more bon vivant. So yes, I think it's been easier for Europe, and in particular Eastern European countries, but that's another separate subject again. It's been easier for Western European countries to retain a stronger, we're talking about nationalists, patriots, indigenous French, say, they have managed to retain a stronger sense of identity because they have this separate culture. Now, English, of course, is the language of business and the language of the internet. And we take in threads in English with our German and French allies and friends, etc. Although I do use French quite a lot. It's an interesting conundrum, but I would say that the free speech, well, we know that in Germany, I think the punishment for historical revisionism is the greatest in Germany, in Austria in particular. Switzerland, perhaps not quite so bad, but still, you know, it's in the German-speaking regions that Holocaust revisionism is cracked down upon the most, to some extent also in French. And I would say that the recent jailing of Hervé Riesen, French author and dissident, Yellow Vest leader. He's written a dozen books. Some of them have been translated into English. You know, he's just been sent to jail for a couple of unfortunate tweets, one book cover and something else that he said on Facebook years ago. And, you know, the fact that this man is in prison because he doesn't touch upon historical revisionism. If you go to, I can't talk about it because of my bail conditions, but this is really serious. You had French President Emmanuel Macron earlier this year, addressing a large audience. I'm not sure whether it was in Lebanon or somewhere in the Middle East, saying, but you know, addressing a largely Muslim audience here, you know, in France, we are the country of human rights, and we have the right to criticize, to mock, even to mock the president, or even to blaspheme the prophet. We have the right. And all this is going on while the recent Charlie Hebdo trials have also been going on in France. But at the same time, you've got this author, intellectual, I think he is, you know, a great intellectual, along with Alain Soral, in prison, sitting in prison. They've not dared to do that to Dieudonné as yet. They've not dared to do it to Alain Soral, but they've done it to this, you know, less well-known guy. I think that's pretty serious. And when you look at Haverbeck and Mahler, Horst Mahler, both of whom were recently released from fairly lengthy spells in jail in Germany, they came out and Mahler immediately gave a speech. And there's other cases for Ursula Haverbeck that were pending. That happened also last month, and Ursula has been resentenced to prison again.
Terrible.
And she will appeal this. But as her lawyer explains in one very interesting video, those are on Monica Schaefer's website. Do go and have a look, because she has explained clearly. Wolfram Narrath makes quite an emotionally charged interview with Nikolai Nerling, Der Volkslehrer. He's quite a well-known YouTuber in Germany, nationalist YouTuber, productive and appealing product, Der Volkslehrer, I would say. But he explains, the lawyer explains, that Ursula knows, she knows that by refusing to say that certain parts of history are not true, she is going to go back to prison because that is the law. Therefore, she is aware that she's going to go back to prison. She will appeal. She will try and appeal and exhaust all the appeal possibilities. before they do put her back in prison. She also knows that there's a great possibility, being 92 years old, that she's going to leave prison feet first in a box, straight to the grave. But she's prepared to do that. She's prepared to make this sacrifice for her beliefs, as is Horst Mahler. Same with him. He's made a speech, and he will again go in front of the court, and he will again be sentenced. Now, Narrath is defending terrible. Both these fine men, fine Germans. Yet they know what they are doing, Jan. They know that,
and they,
you know, unless
and
they say, and they take that, you know, they take those hits to show others who is doing the hits, who's dishing out the hits.
And they know for a fact they don't stand a chance. There's an absolute certainty they cannot avoid the outcome.
Well, yes, it's frustrating, you know, Jan. It must be frustrating for everybody. And especially for the lawyers, before we saw that Sylvia Stoltz, who had originally defended Horst Mahler, she herself ended up in prison because the lawyer is unable to defend the client using any material that breaches the law. The Understood. Material itself breaches the law. Therefore, they cannot properly defend the client. Therefore, all they can do is hope for, you know, a raising of profile. But all these demonstrations, we've seen this because some quite large demonstrations outside the prison in Germany. A lot of very dedicated people, you know, supporting these dissidents, and rightly so. But what has it done? What good has it done in the end? And then there's the issue I'm talking about recent. Faurisson was never just fined. They gave him fines, as they've given to Dieudonné. Robert Faurisson was never jailed. Vincent Renoir was jailed. He's now in England. He can function here because he's functioning in his native language, and there's no law, anti-revisionist law, in England. So he is still being very productive and very useful for the cause. Then you see, coming back to the German, we've also had in Canada, Arthur Topham, another two years on probation, not allowed to mention, you know, any kind of sensitive topics.
It's terrible, terrible.
Okay, well, that is going to be it for Team White today, and you've had your report from three continents about all the thrilling things going on one of the planets in our solar system. And I say that because I saw someone claiming that we needed some kind of – they were projecting the same kind of multiculturalism for interplanetary stuff. So there's loads of insane people out there who believe we've already been contacted. But whatever. Anyway – we'll be back with you again in a couple of weeks when we see how this Trump stuff works out. But anyway, thanks to Allison Chablot in the UK and Jan in South Africa. I've been Alex Linder in Northeast Missouri. And we'll be back with you again for another Team White real, real soon.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
yes, indeed.
Merry Christmas. We've forgotten about
that. All right, I apologize. This was substandard on my part, but I've got some stuff I got to get figured out.
Yeah, but, don't worry.
Don't worry. Hopefully you tell them whatever you need to tell them about what's going on in your area. I think you did, so
yeah,
that'll be good.
We're good. Thanks very much, Alex. Have a good
okay.
day. These are Alex Linder's websites, www.alexlinder.com, pieville.net, that's his Twitter type of website, www.vnnforum.com, you'll find a ton of information on there. And then his news website, which is www.kirksvilletoday.com. These are my websites. historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.